Hello, and welcome to episode 69 of Cavalytics. Cavalytics is a show about the reigning NBA champion Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. The Cavs are back in the NBA Finals, and on today's show, we're going to preview their matchup against the Western Conference champion Golden State Warriors. We'll evaluate their rosters, give what we think the key matchups are, and at the end of the show, we'll give our predictions. I am Keith Carter, a lifelong Cavs fan living in San Francisco with a building feeling of dread about the next 2 weeks. My co-host is Arnav Chabra, a PhD candidate at MIT, LeBron James expert, and someone who I have a feeling is going to be at least a little bit more optimistic about the Cavs' chances here than I am. How's it going, Arnav?
Pretty good. How about you? It's been a long time.
Yeah, I was out of town after glorious game five, so we didn't get a chance to record.
Did you know that we did not trail for 1 second in TD Garden?
I did not know that. That's
all three games did not trail for a second.
That's pretty embarrassing for the Celtics, honestly. Yeah.
And their only win came on the back of like Marcus Smart hitting 7 threes and LeBron basically just falling asleep that day.
It's funny how even at this level, the players are really affected by like sort of momentum, and they, you know, like the Cavs are better than the Celtics, especially without Isaiah Thomas, but they shouldn't be winning by 30 plus points. And yeah, the Celtics just couldn't muster. I mean, these guys are all like multi-millionaire professionals. And even at this level, people get demoralized. I don't know. I always think that's sort of interesting.
Yeah, it's not just that. I think it's one thing that they have better talent. I think it's just also the Cavs are just a terrible matchup for them, right? Like they have nobody who has a semblance of guarding LeBron. They can't keep Tristan off the boards. They can't even guard Kevin Love. And then basically the one guy they could guard was Kyrie Irving, and he went off. So like basically stood no chance in that series.
Yeah, it was fun watching Irving and Love sort of come to their own in that series, and I'm pretty excited to see how they do in the finals here. I was not super high. Well, I'm never high on Irving, but I'm as high as I can possibly get on Irving right now, and I'm feeling really good about Love. So, yeah, I'll be curious to see how he'll do.
Before we get in, do you think there's anything else the Cavs could have shown you before the finals? Reasonably speaking, outside of like any injuries or something else, that would have made you more optimistic? Or do you think this is sort of you could reasonably expect to be the maximum?
That's a really good question, because it sort of forces me to consider whether I'm just negative as a person and no matter what they do, I wouldn't have been happy. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more consistency out of J.R. Smith offensively. But I mean, J.R. Smith is like the Cavs' sixth best player. I mean, maybe fifth. And
possibly fifth, I would say.
Yeah. And I'm not super down on him. Like, I'm just not as
He's been
high.
Efficient, and he's fallen asleep. He I think, dropped a little bit defensively in the Celtics series. But offensively, he's been efficient, just on really low usage. That's the difference.
I don't think he's as good of a player this year going into the finals as he was last year.
I think that's probably fair, yeah. But he's basically, his production has been taken over by Kevin and LeBron just shooting the heck out of the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not like JR's drop in volume, a major drop in volume and slight drop in efficiency. It's not like that's hurt the Cavs on offense. In fact, I think the Cavs have the best points per possession of any team in the playoffs ever. Is that right?
Ever, yeah. 120 plus offensive rating, which has never been recorded ever. Not even close, honestly. Like this is by far the best offense we've ever seen.
That's pretty spectacular and pretty unexpected, at least after the way the Cavs played the last month of the season.
I mean, I expect, because even last year, they had the second best offense ever for a team that won a championship. So, yeah. Like, I expected them to be up there, but I didn't expect 120 plus. Like, that's just bonkers.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose at this point, we need to just concede the regular season and not analyze it at all. So, maybe we won't podcast during the regular season next year, since who cares? It doesn't matter. But yeah, I mean, I thought the Cavs would improve some, or at least I hoped they would improve some, but holy smokes. I mean, they are, nobody can stop them.
Yeah, I would say the regular season is more important in terms of like injuries and just general wear and tear.
Yeah.
But scheme wise, I think just the Cavs just run different stuff in the playoffs. So like
it certainly doesn't matter. Yeah, I mean, it seems not to matter to establish good patterns or good habits since their patterns and habits were terrible and now they're amazing. It's confusing.
Maybe it'll show up in the finals, right? Like they haven't really faced a worthy opponent either. So it's hard to say whether that stuff is important at the margins or in the bulk.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess we'll see. The Cavs are, I think, around 3-1 underdogs.
Yeah, which is what, 75%, right?
Yeah.
75% underdogs, yeah.
It's a little bit hard to tell because the odds makers have what's called a vigorish. So they take a cut. So like when you see the odds for the Cavs, it's not exactly what the odds makers think they are. It's what it is, including their sort of vigorish. Like if you were to take the Cavs odds and the Warriors odds, they don't sum to 100. They sum to like something significantly less than 100 because...
Isn't it also that if they think that the public is really high on one team, then they'll change the line to account?
Yeah, the line, they set the line initially, and then it moves based on where the money goes. Now, incredibly, they almost always get it pretty close initially. It's impressive. But in any case, yeah, I think the Cavs are about, 3-1, 25% chance to win, which is not... I would prefer it to be higher.
It's the second lowest ever for a LeBron team.
Is it really? Was it lower in 2 years
07.
Ago? Right, against the Spurs. Of course. Yeah, that makes sense.
2 years ago, I think he was in the 2015 one or the 2014 one against the Heat. 2015, it wasn't that low just because Kyrie was healthy at the time.
Right. Oh, that's right. Love was out, but Kyrie was not yet injured. Yeah, okay. And I don't know if people really were able to... I mean, the Warriors hadn't won 73 games yet either.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think there's a number of different directions we can go here. I thought it might be sort of interesting to rate the rosters. And as we go through that exercise, we'll probably end up talking about all of the players of note. But I'm not quite sure... Well... Maybe we should just start going down until...
Go with matchups and start at point guard.
We could do that. Sure. All right, let's just do that. Okay, so at point guard, the Cavs have Kyrie Irving, who's pretty good. And the Warriors have Stephen Curry, who's also pretty good. I think the Warriors win that matchup, though.
Yeah. I mean, on average, yes. But... as we saw last year, there's a small chance that Kyrie can outplay Steph Curry, but I would definitely not bet on that.
Yeah, I mean, going by per-game averages, Kyrie has massively outplayed Steph 2 finals in a row. Now, I don't think that's going to continue. There are obviously some extenuating circumstances. For example, Kyrie Irving only played one game in the finals 2 years ago. And Steph has been inexplicably cold in both of the final series.
The thing is, though, last year, I didn't think his offense was as much of an issue as people made it out to be. I thought he wasn't, otherworldly efficient, but he had still like 58, 59 true shooting percentage.
Yeah.
Over the course of the series. My biggest issue with why he played so poorly was on the defensive end. Like, he was getting attacked every single possession in games 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah.
And his turnovers, he had the same number of turnovers as LeBron, and he had a less than 1 assist per turnover ratio.
Yeah, he was really sloppy with the ball. There was an article by Chris Haynes this week. He's the beat reporter who used to follow the Cavs around, and now he follows the Warriors around, and he was talking to Steph about that pass he made toward the end of game 5. There were about game 7. I mean, there were about 5 minutes left when he tried the behind the back pass. And he said, obviously he regrets that play. He knows that every possession is really important in the playoffs and especially the finals and especially game 7. But he can make that pass and he doesn't want to sort of remove that from his arsenal. And it was just sort of interesting hearing him acknowledge that that was a pretty major mistake.
I mean, I don't think that one pass changed the odds at all, to be honest with you. I think it's just exaggerated just because it was such a poor pass and it was sort of in the waning moments of Game 7, especially when neither team could score. But in the grand scheme of things, it's just a normal behind-the-back pass that just went awry once. Like, I just don't think it was that big of a deal.
Yeah, it was just emblematic. I mean, just like the chase-down block was just one play. It sort of became emblematic.
Even with the chase-down block, at least like it was in the final 2 minutes, so like it swung the probability a lot.
Right. The other one. That pass was probably swung the probability at least maybe a third as much or something. It depends. Okay, so Steph has been really good in the playoffs so far, which is sort of different than the last 2 years.
Was pretty good coming into the finals last year too, though.
Yeah, he was good in Game 7, especially against Oklahoma City last season.
And even Game 6, I would say. And then he was really good in the Portland series before the OKC series.
Yeah.
Especially after he came back from the injury. What was your question?
I'm trying to find some reason for hope that Steph is not going to, for the first time in three seasons, just play like his normal self. I mean, he hasn't even been sort of close to his normal level the last two seasons in the playoffs. And I think the narrative is the Cavs really ran him into the ground defensively. They were pretty physical with him. They kept running him into screens. LeBron would come down and keep switching until he got Steph on him or Kyrie got Steph on Kyrie. And because of that, Steph was tired and he wasn't as good offensively. That might be right, or it might just have been bad luck. I'm not sure. Or maybe it's a little bit of both. What do you think?
Probably a little bit of both, because I think I was listening to Dunkdown and they had some numbers on this actually. And they mentioned that...
I heard that too, yeah. Yeah. I remember him.
I think they had 12-plus possessions per game after Game 2, where they attacked Steph in one-on-one situations in pick-and-roll.
Yeah.
And on those, I think the Cavs ended up scoring, what was it, 1.23 or 1.24 points per possession?
Yes.
Which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, that's better than their offensive rating right now. So basically, whenever they got Steph switched on to LeBron, they feasted. So.
Yeah, and
it wasn't just the points. Sorry, it wasn't just the points. It was the fact that Steph also got in foul trouble. So if you look at his numbers, his foul rate went up by like 200% or something ridiculous from his regular season rate. So the Cavs were attacking him so much that he had no chance but to just foul people.
Yeah, it was bizarre. I mean, Steph got into foul trouble in two of the games. One in a big way.
He got even ejected, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he threw something at a fan and didn't get suspended. We leave that alone. And yeah, I mean, they got in his head. He was playing poorly. And it doesn't seem crazy to speculate that something similar could happen again. But it also doesn't seem crazy that he could play significantly better than we've seen the last 2 years and still not be at his normal or at his occasional supernova self.
Yeah. I think Cavs should still game plan like they have in the past and see what happens. Like if he's making tough shots, then you tip your hat. That's all you can do, right?
Do you think that the Warriors defensively might try going under on LeBron a little bit more? Let him shoot.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I think they're going to try that because I think that's their only prayer of guarding the Cavs, right? One of the reasons why the Cavs have been so good is because teams can't go under. And if you can't go under on LeBron, he's going to pick you apart, essentially. Because at that point, he has a seam and an opening, and he'll find an open guy. It's pretty simple for him at that point.
Yeah. I agree. It's just risky. I mean, LeBron is true shooting 66% in the playoffs. So.
And off the dribble, he's shooting like 45 or something ridiculous from three. So.
Yeah. Yeah, he's 42% overall from three in the playoffs. And... yeah, I mean, if he shoots at that rate, the Cavs are in pretty good shape. Okay, so, all right, and Irving?
Irving, I would say, I mean, it's crazy because he had a 48 true shooting percentage going into round three, and he had like a 76 true shooting percentage in round three, and his overall true shooting percentage is actually a very respectable 58 now. So one series basically uplifted him all the way.
Yeah.
From a horrible playoffs to a pretty good playoffs.
He was pretty good in game three, and then in games four and five against Boston, he was just amazing. I'm hopeful that he can keep up that sort of offensive production. The concern with Irving, I suppose, has to lie defensively. And
it's interesting though, like with in that matchup specifically, in the, and feel free to correct me on this, but in the Warriors matchup, I haven't noticed them attack him defensively as much. I know like he gets back cut a little bit here and there, but individually in the pick and roll, I haven't noticed them attack him at all. Have you noticed
that? I haven't either. No, I was pausing to think about that. No, I haven't. We might be misremembering that. He's been pretty good defensively the last two seasons. I don't know.
In the playoffs.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, especially I meant specifically in the finals. Right. And they're, you know, going to have to ask him to step up again. It actually reminds me, did you read the article about J.R. Smith? I can't remember. It was in 538. And it was talking about how J.R. Smith is much better defensively against good offensive players.
Yeah, it was Chris Herrings, right? I did see that. Yeah.
I think so. And anyway, to my eye, Irving is sort of the same way. Like when he really needs to step up defensively, he seems to. And this sort of follows the Cavs' general narrative, which is they don't seem to care when it doesn't matter to a fault and lose a lot of games they don't need to lose. But when it matters, they just seem to lock in a way that is totally unexpected based on what we've seen prior. So it becomes a little bit hard to know what like their true ceiling here is. But if Irving can be half as good as he's been the last two seasons, that would be a plus.
Kind of in the theme of basically what you just said, if you think about the Boston series, when Isaiah Thomas was out there, they knew who they wanted to take out of the game. So they were trapping him, they were recovering well. But as soon as Isaiah Thomas went out for that game three and like half of game four, they just looked lost defensively, right? Because like they had no idea who to take out of the game. They were trying to play them straight up and they just looked very different than they had the rest of the series.
Yeah.
So I feel like once they know who to lock into, they can do a much better job, but I think the unpredictability is what kills them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they know what's coming here, and it's...
They know who's going to score. It's going to be Steph. It's going to be KD and Clay to some extent, but
yeah,
it's going to be those two main guys.
So let's move on to shooting guard. So we've got Klay Thompson and J.R. Smith. I think the Warriors win that matchup too.
Except JR has been outplaying Clay this playoff.
That's right.
In fact, over the course of a large sample size, I would pick Clay, obviously.
I can't remember what the qualifier was, but if you use some qualifier and maybe it's like 100, you must have played 100 minutes, or maybe you have to play 20 minutes per game. Klay Thompson's been the worst player in the playoffs by player efficiency rating. He has like a player efficiency
7.4.
rating of, yeah, that's bad.
That's horrible. Let's put it that way.
If I were a betting man, yeah, I agree. I would expect Clay to play better. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, short series. Maybe JR can...
And Clay in general has struggled against the Cavs. Like, I don't know if that's a sample size issue or if it's, you know, a JR / Shumpert issue. I think some of it is that the Cavs like to just take him out of the game so that way they don't have to worry about him at all. Because, you know, you can just... assign the guy to him and just ask him to never help off of. Like, face guarding someone isn't that hard. It's just that it takes away help defense for other guys who can drive. What's up?
Do you think J.R. Smith is going to start guarding Klay Thompson?
It's an interesting question, because, like, who's going to guard KD, right? Like, I think...
Right.
I think LeBron is going to have to do it. I know they like to have LeBron.
I think in crunch time, definitely LeBron will be on KD. But
starting, he's probably not going to start. So maybe they'll do something weird like putting Tristan Thompson. So there's been some hand-wringing about putting Tristan Thompson on KD. Mm-hmm. Let me put it out there. Like, Tristan Thompson's not fast enough to keep up with KD in one-on-one situations.
Yeah.
That said, what a lot of people are suggesting is that maybe that's what you want. Maybe you want KD to pick up the scoring load early on. So A, he's going to be tired by the end of the game, so like in the third and fourth quarter, and B, it's going to devolve into more ISOs and into less of like Steph running the show. And really when the Warriors go crazy is when like Steph is, you know, running off of screens, Klay is getting wide open threes, they're getting back cuts. Like that's when the Warriors are unstoppable. Again, KD is very efficient, but Cavs also have a good offensive rating. So I think they can possibly keep up with one guy going off. But if like three guys are going off, it's over for them.
Yeah, I think that if you could force the Warriors into ISOs, even if they're ISOs that are
probably the second best or the best guy in the league.
Yeah, even if it's Kevin Durant on Tristan Thompson, at least it's not Steph getting a three in space. Yeah, and you know they're going to get a good shot sort of regardless. You just have to try to get something that only averages 1.1 points per possession versus 1.3.
Exactly.
And hope you get enough of the 1.1 ones.
And ISOs in general, like, he may start off hot, and then, like, over time, you know, you get tired too. Like, everybody gets tired. And KD, as good as they have been, KD and Steph have not been playing heavy minutes. So I do wonder how much conditioning will play into this whole thing, because...
Yeah, the Cavs, whether through incompetence or intent, are definitely used to having the starters play heavy minutes.
Well, LeBron mostly, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's been getting up there for Irving and Love in some of these games too, though.
Oh, is that so? I haven't checked their minutes, but yeah, LeBron's been playing. I think he's averaging 40.4 minutes while the Cavs have been blowing teams out, so...
Yeah, that's not... Yeah, so LeBron is averaging 40.9 minutes. Irving's 34.8. Love is 32.1. Thompson's 33.0. And then the rest are all below 26. And I actually have the Warriors here handy. Playoffs per game. Their lead minute guy is Draymond Green at 34.7.
Yeah, so I will say this. I don't think LeBron is going to start on Klay because Klay runs off of too many screens. That's going to be tiring for LeBron. So that's not happening. So I think JR will start on Klay. And then I think it's going to be LeBron either on Draymond or on KD. I think they're going to start him on Draymond and then see how KD responds while having Tristan Thompson on him. And then they're going to put Kevin Love on Zaza Pachulia or whoever starts.
Yeah, I mean, they'll hide Love on Zaza and McGee and whoever.
David West.
It's really hard to know. And the Cavs switch a lot of stuff, too. So even if their intent, for example, let's say their intent is to have LeBron on Durant. On missed shots and transition opportunities, it gets kind of random and there's lots of switching. So it doesn't even necessarily matter what their intent is.
Yeah, and especially with the Warriors, they run so many off-ball and on-ball screens that it's rarely at the end point of the possession, it's rarely the initial assignment guarding the guy.
Right. So, all right, let's move on to small forward. The Cavs have LeBron James, and the Warriors have Kevin Durant.
LeBron wins that matchup.
Yeah, he does. And with a little bit more authority than I may have expected at the beginning of this season.
It's not as big as he would have won over Harrison Barnes, but he still wins that matchup.
Yeah. What does Kevin Durant do better than LeBron James?
Efficiency, scoring efficiency.
Yeah.
That's about
it. Except when LeBron's true shooting 66% in the playoffs. But yeah.
Yeah, and then at that point it's about the same, but... Kevin Durant's body of work
offensively, shooting the basketball is significantly better than LeBron's. Like Durant's is one of the best of all time in terms of volume and efficiency. Durant is just incredible and he's terrifying. LeBron is better at basically everything else. Durant has been pretty good on defense this year at times.
Yeah, he's been using his length well. I was watching some tape from the Miami-Oklahoma City series, the finals in 2012. And Durant has gained a lot of mass. Like, he was very skinny back then.
Yeah, if you didn't bring that up, I was. He's gotten a lot stronger. There's the famous story of him at the combine where he couldn't...
Like 180 or something?
He couldn't do the bench press even once. And he was one of the first players in years to not be able to do it even once. And he was mocked and whatever. Anyway, he got the last lap there. And yeah,
I mean, he was the second overall pick. Like everybody knew he was going to be good. But
yeah, he's bulked up. And that bulk has made him a significantly better defender.
I still don't think he can sort of handle LeBron sort of ramming into him if LeBron is coming on full speed. Yeah. I don't think he has much of a chance there. But then, like, who does, right? Because, like, we saw Serge Ibaka bouncing off of LeBron. Right. We saw, what's his face? Who was guarding him in the Toronto series? The stunt guy?
Oh, PJ Tucker.
PJ Tucker, yeah. Like, he was bouncing off of LeBron. Jay Crowder was bouncing off of LeBron. So, like...
Yeah, I mean, no one's stopping LeBron when he's coming downhill.
I think his length can bother him a little bit more than, obviously, Harrison Barnes did, but...
I think expecting LeBron to do in these finals what he did in last year's finals is a little bit unfair, but it's unfair for two reasons. One, because last year he was just freaking amazing. And two, it's going to be tougher this year because the Warriors' defense is better with Durant switched in for Barnes.
Yes, it's definitely. But I do think LeBron didn't shoot as well as he has been this season. So if he shoots well, I think he can compensate for a lot of that. Because like even in the finals, I think he only shot like 34% from three over the course of the series. And I think he ended up with like a 58 true shooting percent, which was really good, obviously, given the level of competition they were facing and the amount of work he had to do and how good he was defensively. Mm-hmm. I think what's really going to be hard for him is to replicate what he did defensively in the finals last year. That's probably harder, honestly.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, stopping this Warriors juggernaut is not...
especially with like KD in there. Non-trivial task. Because they could sort of just leave Barnes, right? Like, doing all that he did defensively is probably tougher, I think.
Yeah, the Cavs have to choose their poison. I think that it's tricky. I mean, I think they're probably going to try leaving Draymond relatively uncovered once he gets more than, say, 20 feet away from the hoop.
Yeah, Iguodala is going to be wide open. He can take all the threes in the world he wants.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to him yet, but he is 3 of 27 in the playoffs from 3. He's shooting 11%.
Yeah. I don't expect that to continue, but like even then, like no matter what he was shooting, I would have given him the open 3 just because it's just not worth.
Yeah, you can't cover everything, right? And
even with Draymond, I would actually err on the side of giving him the open 3 because I think once you close out on him, he can then put the ball on the floor. And then make a play near the basket, which is even a higher percentage shot. So,
yeah. Well, all right. So let's move on to power forward. So at power forward, the Cavs have Kevin Love. The Warriors have Draymond Green.
I think Draymond wins that matchup mostly because how good he is defensively.
Yeah.
Like Kevin's been playing much better than he was at this point last season.
Yeah.
But and I think he has closed the gap. But at the same time, I think Draymond is like a top 10, top 15 player easily in the league.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. The gap is closed, though. And yeah.
It's the closest it's ever been.
It's nice.
Yeah. Not ever, but like it's the closest it's been in the last couple of years. But
yeah, I think that, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, yeah, they both play the same position. They probably won't be guarding each other that much.
Draymond's probably going to guard Kevin, I think.
Yeah, they'll start that way.
Who else would they guard him with, right?
Yeah.
Because I think if they put like Iguodala on him, Iguodala maybe can do a decent job because he's lengthy. They could put Kevin Durant, but then Draymond, I don't think he's quick enough to guard LeBron.
If Iguodala's in the game, they'll probably have him on LeBron.
Either him or KD, depending on how Iggy's looking. But yeah, most likely Iguodala.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm hoping that Love can do some stuff offensively this series. He was not great in the finals offensively last year.
Let's recap his finals. So in game one, I thought he was actually probably a second best player last year in the finals, just because everybody was bad. He was actually kind of decent comparatively. Game two was the concussion game. I think he played like, 10 minutes or something and then was out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Game three, he missed. Game four, he came off the bench. I know he started off hot then missed a couple of shots, but like overall, it was whatever. Like he only played like 20 minutes again. Game five, he was in foul trouble, so he was not good that game. Game six, again, he got in early foul trouble, only played 11 minutes. Not good that game either. Game seven, I thought it was sort of underrated because he ended up like plus 13 or something.
He led the team in plus minus that game. Plus I remember that.
He also had so many, I think he had 13 or 14. I need to look up these numbers, but it's close enough. I think he had 14 rebounds in 31 minutes, which means he basically kept us in the game in the first half when we were missing all those shots, and he was getting rebounds and second chance opportunities.
Yeah, he wasn't great on, I mean, nobody was good on Martin Luther King Day, and he wasn't great on Christmas Day this year either.
I disagree. I thought he was good on Christmas Day.
I can't remember, actually. I was making better.
Points on, I think on 15 or 16 shooting possessions, and he rebounded the ball. I thought he was good.
Okay, that's encouraging. So maybe he's figured something out.
In general, he's looked much more confident. So I think Mike Savagno had some numbers. So you know how that pump fake that he does, and then he moves to the left and then takes a shot?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
So he's shooting 5 of 11 on threes on those, even though in the regular season, I think he shot one of, I think Mike said 20-something. So like he basically made one three like that in the regular season.
How did he count those? Made five.
I think Synergy has pretty definitive ones.
Taking a step to the left. Yeah, we should take a closer look at that since we're paying for it. That's interesting. Yeah, I do remember not liking whenever he took a sidestep. But
he also hit some step back threes in the Celtics series. I don't know if you saw that in like the final game. But
He was moving his feet a lot and still making, which is something we haven't really seen.
And I think objectively speaking, this is by far the best he's looked defensively.
Yeah, I mean, we've sort of gone into that in previous episodes, but he's been sort of...
One thing I've had an issue...
I know what the word is. He's been a revelation defensively.
Yeah. One thing I've had an issue with his performance is that he hasn't rebounded the ball well against them. And honestly, like, matchup-wise speaking, there's no reason why that should be the case. I think it may be their confidence thing. And also, he just didn't play that many minutes in the finals because he was injured for two of the games. And the other games, he was in foul trouble for the most part. So, and the one game that he wasn't, he actually rebounded the ball really well in game 7.
Yeah, I mean, look, Kevin Love is a guy who I suspect struggles with his confidence at times. And playing the Warriors is emotionally oppressive for anybody. And for him, it's particularly tough. It's not a great matchup for him. And so to the extent that that matters in terms of being able to generate the enthusiasm to work hard to get yourself in the right places, that probably affected him a bit last year. It seems to me that his confidence should probably be at a local maximum right now. And I'm really anxious, excited, nervous to see how he performs here. I mean... He's been okay against the Warriors generally the last 2 years. It'd be nice to see him play at an all-star level. And that's certainly not an unreasonable expectation. I don't know what the odds are that he'll play that well, but I mean, it could happen. And that would be a huge, huge plus for the Cavs.
Yeah, because if you recount the way Cavs won in the finals, it was basically on the back, offensively speaking, it was on the backs of two guys. And defensively speaking, it was on the backs of also two guys, which was Tristan Thompson and LeBron James, right? Yep. They basically got very little from other people. Like, J.R. Smith was actually surprisingly effective in game 3, you know, the one where the Cavs won by like 20.
Yes.
And then he shot pretty decently, I would say. And then other than that, they just got very little out of other people. So I think I do expect a little more balanced production this time. And also think about it this way. Mo Williams was getting minutes in the finals. No matter what you think of Deron Williams, he's an upgrade over Mo Williams, I'll tell you that.
Have you heard anything about Deron Williams' shoulder?
No? Is there a reason?
So I guess it's quote-unquote banged up. I've heard that on two podcasts today that I was listening to.
Wait, who said that?
Chris Manning said it, and I think they mentioned it on Dunked On as well.
Oh, okay. I didn't notice that. Sorry. Was it in the Celtics series?
Yeah, I think he injured it. He got into it with Marcus Smart. I can't remember. He got into it with somebody. He set like a hard sprain.
I think he was holding his hand at some point. I just didn't know if it was serious or not.
Yeah.
But he had a really good game 5, if you remember.
He did. Yeah. He's cleared to play and everything. I don't know. I didn't know if you'd heard anything that I hadn't heard, but sounds like no.
I think he'll get 20 minutes a game, to be honest with you. Or at least 15 to 20.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a hot take. Do you think is he the first guy off the Cavs bench?
Yeah, he or Shumpert, I guess. One of the two. Probably he. Maybe Shumpert, I don't know. Because the matchup, since KD's going to be playing a lot, maybe Shumpert then. But
yeah, I don't love the Shumpert-KD matchup, but I'm guessing we're going to see quite a bit of it.
Yeah. I mean, just got to hope Shumpert is peak Shumpert, which is in a good way, not a bad way.
Yeah. Yeah, peak Shumpert, yeah, of his good stuff, not his crazy bad stuff, like deep step back twos and missing dunks. Okay, well, just yeah, for completeness sake, let's finish with center. So we've got Zaza Pachulia for the Warriors and Tristan Thompson for the Cavs.
Yeah, I think Tristan wins that pretty easily.
Yeah, pretty handedly.
Zaza is a little underrated, I think, as a screener. Like, his screens are pretty nasty. I don't know if you've seen a lot of Warriors games, but this guy,
he's kind of like
Bogut in that sense, honestly.
I've seen a lot of complaining about Zaza's screens.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll see more, but
I mean, Tristan does the same thing. Like, it's especially in the finals, he was holding a lot, and that's fine. That's what they should do.
Yeah, you should hold until they start calling it.
Exactly. So I have no issues with the screens. I'm just saying they're really effective screens, especially when you have shooters like Klay and Steph. Like, those guys can come off of those screens. So I think Cavs are going to have to find a way to either get Zaza in like foul trouble or sort of just rile him up to get him off rhythm. Because if the refs are letting him get away with those screens, these guys are going to get some open looks.
Yeah. He's a big guy. And so he's an ideal screener. He's not ideal in that he's not super threatening as a role guy.
He can't finish around the rim.
But he's ideal in that he just takes up a lot of space, and running around him in order to get back on Steph Curry is tricky. And so so they use that play a lot. Yeah, it'd be nice to see him get into foul trouble. I'm not sure.
Or would it maybe, if he plays more, then we have somewhere to hide Love on?
You don't want the Warriors to realize, like, every single person who follows the NBA closely already knows that their best lineup is Draymond at the five.
Who's the other wing? Is it Iguodala then, you think?
Usually Iggy, yeah.
Yeah, but
although Iggy's not pretty bad. He has looked pretty bad, and he hasn't played. I mean, he missed two. No, he's only missed one of the playoff games, but
he's had knee issues for most of them, I think, or back issues. One of the two. He had back issues last year, knee issues this year.
It's his knee this year. And the guy's 33, you know, and chasing LeBron James around is probably a bit of a load. It'd be nice to see him. He's been so impactful the last two finals. He was finals MVP 2 years ago, and he was good last year, too, until he really just
he
I
got
think he was hurt
pretty
game good. Seven. Yeah, I mean, he was not good.
It's hard to guard LeBron for that in those long periods, to be honest with you. And he was also guarding Kevin Durant in the series before that. So, like,
right.
Those are, like, two tough guys to go against. Yeah.
You can imagine being worn down after a month of chasing around KD and LeBron James for 14 games. But counting on him to get hurt or play at as low of a level as he did in those last two games is probably not reasonable. I mean, I just think he's probably not. He's getting older. He was significantly less good this year by RPM. So, yeah, I'll be interested to see. I've watched some Warriors games, but not enough to really know if there's something going on with his RPM beyond an actual lowered amount of play or if he's actually not quite as good.
Yeah, I think that this is also sort of a beacon of hope for the Cavs, because if he can neutralize LeBron, not neutralize, but at least like limit him from going off completely like he has in the past few series, then the Cavs, you know, just become a much less potent offense. And at that point, it's just almost impossible for them to win the series.
Yeah.
So I think him not being 100% or at least not being as effective as he has in the past. And then on the flip side, KD having to guard LeBron, which means he doesn't have as much juice on the other side. Because here's some numbers for you. So in the OKC series against the Warriors last year, when Kevin had to do a lot of the defensive, had to take up a lot of the defensive load, because the Oklahoma City Thunder was not that good defensively without him. So he had to pick up a lot of the slack there. He shot worse from 3-point range than Russell Westbrook did during that series. And in general,
wow,
in the entire playoffs, he was shooting worse than Russ did. And Russ takes some terrible shots, let's be honest.
Yeah. No, Russ is not known for his shooting efficiency.
Or shot selection in general. But yeah, like Kevin shot really poorly last year when he had to, when he was asked to do a lot more on the defensive end. So I'm hoping, I don't know if it'll happen because they're all so well rested, but I'm hoping that if he's having to guard LeBron on one end, he can at least reduce his effectiveness in ISO on the other.
Yeah, that's...
it's shown to be the case in the past, but I just don't know. I just don't know what level of physique he's at right now, because he was injured for a little bit. I just don't know like where he is at physically right now. That's the issue.
Right. Yeah, it's just hard to know. And we're getting, into sort of the far reaches of our sample sizes, right? Like most teams don't play this many games, and getting this far into the playoffs is tough. And so, yeah, I mean, we'll see. That's some reason for optimism though, right? Like this will be the first series in a while that Durant has really had to work defensively, and it'll be interesting to see. I'm curious to see how the Warriors will handle, you know, quote unquote adversity. They really didn't.
They had like, in the Spurs, the first game, but then like Kawhi got injured. So like it's hard to tell how much of that was noise.
Yeah, it was like fake adversity. I mean, only three of their 12 games in the playoffs were within 5 points in the last 5 minutes. And so that's good news in that it's been a while since they've, you know, sort of felt the fire. But the bad news is Steph and KD shot 14 of 21. On shots in the last 5 minutes with the score within five. So I said Curry was 6 of 8 from three and Durant was 3 of 4.
Which team was this against? Was this Portland or Utah?
I'm not sure. So one of them was definitely that Spurs game.
Right. And they were really good in that game.
Yeah. And then there must have been two other games that were within 5 points in the last 5 minutes. But so anyway, in that super small sample, both KD and Curry were just fine. But yeah, we'll have to see.
Yeah, it's probably a little different than the finals, to be honest with you. But I think it's going to come down to who can execute better. And I know people like to hand-wring about the Warriors going one-on-one. Like, you know, KD taking one turn and then Steph taking another turn. But honestly, Cavs do that too. Like, it basically devolves to, like, your turn, my turn with LeBron and Kyrie.
Did we talk about ISOs before we started recording? After we started recording?
Okay. No, we haven't. We should talk about that, actually.
Yeah, so the Cavs have isolated on 15.2% of their possessions in the postseason. That's by far the highest rate in the playoffs. And that's up from their league-high regular season rate of 11.9%, which was, the highest in the league. So that's generally thought of as bad. ISO possessions are generally less effective, but the Cavs in the playoffs are averaging 1.16 points per possession on ISOs, which is the best in the playoffs. So they're averaging the most and they're the best at it, which that's good. Yeah, if you're doing something that's not great, you should at least be good at it. And yeah, I mean, 1.16 points per possession is unbelievable. The Cavs are terrific at it. And yeah, you're right. I mean, the Warriors are, when they're humming and their machine is like perfect, they're going to score at a better rate than that. But yeah, when it comes down to it at the end of close games in the NBA Finals, even the Warriors are going to resort to ISO, and it'll be interesting how they do there.
We saw that in Game 7. Like, it's going to happen again.
Yeah, I mean, look, when you get a timeout in between basically every possession, it's it's hard to like have, you know, poetry in motion once the ball gets rebounded. Because
like the defense is set at that point, and then especially at the end of games, like everyone is switching everything, so like you're not going to get open seams. You're just going to have to take somebody one-on-one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Do you think the Cavs are going to switch a lot too? Just not at the end of games, but just overall.
Well, I think they intend to. LeBron and Tristan are certainly capable. JR and Shumpert have been capable. Have demonstrated that they're capable in the past. They didn't really show it much in the regular season this year, but they've shown it in playoffs past, and they showed it in spurts during these playoffs. So Yeah, it may be that the Cavs are just planning on switching a bunch of stuff. If you do it well, I think that's probably the best way to guard the Warriors.
Right?
Because like, you want to get a hand in the shooters' faces, and you're sort of okay giving up ISOs. So if you end up with a matchup that, you know, maybe isn't ideal, like, you know, maybe you have KD on Kyrie Irving or something. Yeah, that's not perfect in a vacuum, but it's probably better than them swinging it around 14 times and getting a wide open Clay or Steph 3.
That's my point, right? Because do you guys remember, or do you remember the games 1 and 2 of the finals last year when we got blown out, basically?
Yeah, the Cavs lost games 1 and 2 by a record. Shots.
Yeah. They were getting wide open back cuts, like off of pin. The Cavs were not ready for that series. I feel like Cavs punted those games because they just had no clue what was going to hit them. Hopefully they don't do that again, because that would suck.
Yeah, it seems unlikely that they're going to come in totally unprepared. I do think the Cavs are a little bit overconfident right now. I think the Warriors are a little overconfident too. It's interesting. They're both have had incredible runs. I think the Warriors are like 27-1 over their last 28 games. The Cavs have the second highest point differential ever heading into the finals. So, I mean, everyone looks great here. And I think, it's probably made both teams a little bit more smug than they should be. But I think that helps the Cavs more, maybe. You can imagine the Warriors not fully being ready for game one.
They have been generally not been great in game one. So, like, let's go back series by series. So like in the Spurs game, they were terrible in game one, right? Like,
yeah, they're down 23 in the third quarter.
Yeah, and Kawhi went down, and that's when they made the comeback. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the Utah game one, because honestly, I wasn't really paying that much attention for them. But last year, they lost to OKC in game one. Remember
that's a good point.
They in finals game one, even though they won, like that was a game, like I said, Cavs should have won, because it was a very close game. Like, they shot really poorly, and Cavs just couldn't.
Oh, game two finals ago. Yeah. Yeah, no.
Or
I mean,
even last year finals, like, it was a very close game until, like, the fourth quarter when their bench killed us. Like, Sean Livingston was getting ridiculous twos.
Yeah. We haven't talked about him yet. There's not much to say. He's good at shooting 16-foot baseline jumpers. Don't let him get those.
Just don't let him get them wide open. As long as you put in a hand, that's fine. Like, I'll take that over wide
he's
open
tough.
Steph 3.
He's tough because he's so tall.
Yeah.
And
they
he
actually
just
put
Mo
Williams on him last year, and it was surprisingly effective. I think Deron Williams is tall enough and strong enough that I think he would be a better matchup than Curry.
And he's seen him a bunch too. So
that's true. Yeah.
He should, at least know what his.
Because they were in Brooklyn together. You remember that?
Wow, I hadn't thought about that. I was just thinking that Deron Williams had been in Dallas and Utah, and may have seen Livingston.
No, Brooklyn together, yeah. He, Joe Johnson, Sean Livingston were on that team that faced LeBron and the Heat.
Poor Nets.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What was I saying before that?
I don't know. Something interesting.
Go ahead.
Well, you were. Go ahead.
What do you think about the coaching matchup? Because I think Steve Kerr doesn't look like he's going to be coaching.
Yeah, the last I saw was that he said he's not ready, and I expect him not to be on the sidelines during the games. Maybe he'll be in the arena at the home games for Golden State. I don't know.
I think he'll be in the. I know he was in the locker room when they were down during game one of the Spurs series, because he gave him a speech apparently, and then
he must have said something really inspirational,
something like, make sure
make
you hit the best guy.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Zaza, run the secret play. It's funny. The one thing that I think the Warriors should do, and it's so obvious to everybody, is they should play Draymond at 5. I mean, that lineup is just better, and the sample size is plenty big, and it forces their opponents to do crazy stuff that they really don't want to do. But they've been loath to do that for the better part of 3 seasons now. So I think Mike Brown is probably less likely to want to do that than Kerr, although Kerr doesn't really want to do it either. Other than that, I mean, I thought Lou outcoached Steve Kerr last year. I'm confident to the extent that that's a thing. I'm confident Luke can outcoach Mike Brown.
Yeah. Not sure how much it's going to matter either way, but, you know, it's,
yeah, I mean,
it's
look, good to have there, an edge. There's not that much rocket science here. I mean, you play Steph, KD, Draymond, and Klay as much as their bodies will allow, and the Cavs play LeBron, Kyrie, Love, and Tristan as much as their bodies will allow, and hopefully our best four are better than their best four. I mean, that's the main of it here. There's all kinds of like really interesting sub-stories, and I think all of these games are going to be a little bit different, and that's what's so interesting about this series. But
do you have the minutes per game pulled up in front of you for the Warriors?
I do. I still have it.
Yeah. Okay. So what is Steph's and what is KD's?
For the playoffs, yeah. Steph is at, I'm going to scroll up here, per game. No, sorry. This is making for really good radio right now. Playoffs per game. So I can be, should be able to sort this. So Draymond is at 34.7. Steph is at 34.3. Klay is at 34.4 and KD is at 33.4. So they're all between 33.4
and 34 minutes, right? Okay. So in general, they've had trouble scoring when either Steph or KD are not on the floor?
Yes.
Together? If it's one or the other, like if it's Steph, then it's okay. But if it's only KD with the bench, that actually hasn't been successful, surprisingly.
Yep.
I mean, it makes sense because Steph is their initiator. He gets double teamed a lot and he gets trapped a lot. They get wide open shots off of whatever happens to him. So my question is, if they stagger those guys and they up their minutes, how much do you think they can up it to? Like, I don't think it's they're going to hit 40 because I don't think Steph even averaged 40 last year in the finals.
I think the Warriors are really frightened to play Steph more than like 36 or 37 minutes a game.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. Okay.
I think they really don't want to do that at all. So I'm actually sorting here. Steph played twice this year. He played more than 38 minutes.
That's
twice.
It.
Yeah.
So he's not averaging 40 minutes tonight.
He played 42 minutes, 13 seconds in a 9-point loss. And he played 41 minutes, 45 seconds in a 3-point loss. And both of those games, one of those games was in January, one was in February. They really don't like to do that.
Yeah, I just don't think he's going to be averaging 40 minutes a night, honestly. Like maybe it will be 40, maybe it definitely won't be like 42 or 43 for sure. Okay, so with KD, I think they can up it a little more. I think KD can be around 40, 41, just because he has done that for OKC in the past, and I think his body will allow it.
Yeah, I'm looking at Steph in the playoffs last year. In Game 7, he played 39 minutes. He played
If you're not playing him in Game 7 more than 39 minutes, like I just don't see
it. I think that's basically what they think the cap is 39, 40.
The reason I'm bringing this up is because LeBron's going to be playing in non-blowout games, he's going to be playing 44, 45 minutes, right?
Yes.
Yeah, which means there is going to be sort of a, I want to say like a 10-minute period where they're going to be without one or the other, right? So they're not going to be on the floor for the same time because they're going to stagger those guys.
Yep.
So I think with LeBron and the bench unit, you have to win those minutes by any means possible. Because I just don't think we can outplay their starters. That's just going to be too hard, I think. But if we can just win those bench minutes by a decent margin, I think that's our best chance of keeping it close to the end.
And certainly the Cavs bench lineups have looked
bench
good.
Bench plus LeBron, but yeah.
Yeah. There have been times during the playoffs where they've looked really, really, really great. Their peak efficiency was sort of in the first two rounds with Channing Frye. We're not likely to see much of Frye this series. But
it was peak offensive efficiency. He was terrible on defense, and it did show up.
The Cavs experimented with a couple things in the Boston series. They tried having Love in for parts of that, which was a little bit interesting. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see. If there is a time when Steph and KD end up off the floor, the Cavs must make sure that LeBron is on the floor and try to take advantage of that.
And that did happen in the Spurs game one, if I remember correctly, because I was whining about it. Well, not whining. I was like, why is this happening?
Yeah. I remember people on Twitter saying like, that shouldn't really be the case in a Western Conference Finals game that Curry and Durant are both off the floor at the same time. But Mike Brown,
even if it's just one on the floor, I think you can still win that sort of a...
I do too. I just think the difference is more pronounced when...
Oh, yeah. If both are off the floor, you better win those. minutes, because I think they talked about this on Dunkdown too, actually. They have this lineup that they like to run with, I think it's Draymond, Clay, Iguodala, David West, and Ian Clark, if I remember correctly. And that lineup should not be able to score on us by any means, right? Like, who the hell is scoring in that lineup? Who's even the initiator? Like, Draymond can sort of initiate, but he's not close to Steph.
Yeah, I mean, I expect the Warriors not to run out a lineup like that, but we'll see.
They've done it in the past, in the finals.
I mean, yeah, like, let's say Draymond gets in foul trouble. Now everything gets sort of messed up, and you can imagine Mike Brown making a mistake there. But
do you know when the last time Draymond was in foul trouble against the Cavs? In the Christmas game.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, I remember the complaining on Twitter about that.
One thing I forgot to mention is the advantage of Kevin Love being a little more aggressive is he can get guys into foul trouble.
Yeah, that's
true.
He
does draw BS fouls a lot.
He's so good at drawing BS fouls. I've mentioned this before, but I get annoyed sometimes. It seems like he's not even trying to take a shot. He's just trying to draw a foul, but he's elite at foul drawing.
Okay, until they can legislate that out, keep doing it.
Yeah, look, it's not his fault that that rip through three works.
Or the
did you read the?
Sorry, go ahead.
Did you read the Zach Lowe article about Tristan Thompson?
Yeah, I thought it was a really well-researched article. He like got a lot of
great article.
Yeah, he got a lot of people to talk about Tristan, which I was like, huh.
Yeah, I thought there were two like really interesting things. That I'll read one of them, and the other one I didn't copy down, but I'll just say. So the first one was. David Blatt calls Tristan Thompson the best fourth quarter rebounder he has ever seen and even asked the team's analytics department to try to prove it. The Cavs were among the first teams to install SportsVU motion tracking cameras, and they showed Thompson outworked everyone, covering more ground, moving faster, moving higher speeds. That's not surprising to anyone listening to this podcast, probably, but it's interesting to hear it put into numbers like that. And then the other thing was he's really an emotional guy.
He was crying after that Rose... Right?
Yeah, after the Derrick Rose 3. Now, I was crying too, but that's because I was just very upset. I guess he was like crying in the shower, according to Mike Miller, and they had to like drag him out. He was inconsolable because he was on Derrick Rose on that play. He got it. He defended it perfectly.
Defense, yeah,
I mean, it's just
that
Rose.
That was not his fault at all. That was not his fault,
yeah.
If anything, anyway, it was Shepard's fault for switching off, but... The defense was fine on that possession. It was just a banked lucky three.
If any of our listeners are looking for something to read in the next couple of days before game one tips off, it's really a great read. And it's the normal Zach Lowe stuff with like nice video examples explaining what he does well. And it's cool. I love it when the Cavs make the playoffs because you get these much better researched sort of personal interest stories. It's cool.
Did you see the Ringer piece on how... isolation basketball is going to be deciding.
No, I haven't. I saw that on my feed today. I haven't read it yet. What's it say?
Basically, the idea is that both the Cavs and the Warriors devolve into more isolation than general. Obviously, it's much more pronounced for the Cavs because they isolate already a lot at baseline. So in fourth quarter and close games, they do it a lot more. And even the Warriors have a similar jump. So they go from like 8% isolation to like 16% isolation for both Kevin and Steph. Whereas for the Cavs, they go to like 27% isolation for both LeBron and Kyrie. Just those two guys, not as a team, but...
Right.
Yeah. And basically the idea is that it's going to... If it's a close game, it's going to be decided by isolation basketball. And all four of those guys are very... proven isolation scorer, so it's just going to come down to who can make more shots.
Yeah, it's funny. I am comfortable if it comes down to that.
That closes the gap, right? That's the
right, exactly. Close the gap. Exactly. Like, look, you don't really want to be in a situation where you're going up against Durant and Steph in a game of ISO because those guys are awesome, but we have two of the best as well. So, having an even playing field is better than what the Cavs are looking at for the rest of this series, which in my opinion is a pretty uneven playing field, which is maybe a good segue to our predictions.
Yeah. So I think I did this last time. Do you want to go ahead first, actually?
Well,
or I can go first too, either way.
I'm not going to change what I'm going to say based on what you're going to say. So why don't you go first?
So I had this model last year where I basically threw out the regular season just because the Cavs look so different from the regular season to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And I did the same for the Warriors. So it's even for both. And okay. I basically took their net rating from each of the playoff series, adjusted it for the opponent. And I also adjusted the opponent in terms of any injuries that they had. So okay. like, let's say, so if I look at the Spurs SRS, I adjusted it for Kawhi being out 3.5 games, which okay. basically makes them the same as Utah without George Hill. So it was pretty right, similar right. level. So, and then I adjusted.
Yeah, I mean, you take off a first team All-NBA-er and shockingly. I mean,
top three player in the league, yeah. but yeah. And then you look at the net ratings and then you sort of add it all up. Basically, it ends up that the Cavs and the Warriors have faced similar competition this year, these playoffs, and they've also performed similarly well. But the difference ends up being that the Warriors have home court advantage, which I'm just not sure how important it is right now, but I'm going to include the traditional, you know, 15% difference mm-hmm. at home versus away. Okay. So my model gives two local maximums for the Warriors. They're both at 20% and they're both at Warriors in 5 and Warriors in 7. So it's kind of a toss-up between those two. Pick whichever one you yeah. want. I don't really care. And yeah. the odds it gives for the Warriors is 64%. And the odds it gives for the Cavs is 36%. With the Cavs maximum obviously being at Cavs in 6. And the second highest being at Cavs in 7.
Hmm.
So to recap, 20% chance Warriors in 5, 20% chance Warriors in 7, 16% chance Warriors in 6, and then it goes 14% Cavs in 6, 11% Cavs in 7, 7% Cavs in 5.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That model is basically ignoring the regular season.
Basically,
completely. Which really helps the Cavs.
But like honestly, the Warriors case. Have been great too. Like they've been just as good as they were in the regular. Honestly, they've been better.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. And really, I mean, look, the Cavs have played now 13 games in the playoffs. That's should
not a
be
lot,
enough.
But like, I just can't. I wish there was a larger sample size, but I can't. You know, I think it would be disingenuous to take the regular season. A, they were injured. They were not playing like this. Like anybody who's seen them play in the two modes knows that it's a very different game for them.
Yeah. I agree. I just. Yeah. Okay. So what do you predict?
I mean, it's like I said, I have two maximum of five Warriors in 5 and Warriors in 7. So I'm just going to flip a coin and go with Warriors in 7. Why not?
Okay. I think it's going to be Warriors in 5. Okay. Yeah. Actually, that's not right. I don't think it's going to be Warriors in 5. I think that if I have to choose a single thing, that's the best bet. I think it's like a 30% chance that the Warriors win in 5 and or maybe 25 or something like that. And
so six slash seven is the addition of those two is more likely than Warriors in 5.
Yes. Yeah. And Warriors in 4 plus 6 plus 7 is way more than Warriors in 5. I think for sure the Warriors are going to win the series. Now, I don't think for sure. I think it's like maybe 80-20 or 70-30. The Cavs have like probably a 20 or 30% chance.
Oh, you're right. I think I'm at 36%, Vegas, but yeah.
Do you think that, I mean, but is that what you really think it is? Like, would you bet on that? No, I mean, obviously, if you think it's better than what Vegas does, that you'll just take the Vegas thing. But
I think it is just because of how good LeBron has looked. Yeah. And I think if he's shooting that well, that changes the whole dynamic, honestly. Like, that changes the calculus for them guarding the Cavs. And, like, the Cavs have been really good offensively. Like, and the best way to beat a Warriors team is, I think, to match them offensively. We're not going to be able to defend them at a high enough level where like we can be like, oh, we held them to 105 per 100 possessions. They're going to score 114. They're going to score 115 on you per 100 possessions. So like you're going to have to just match that offensive output.
It's definitely better to be good offensively than good defensively because I think offense is harder to stop. Like I'm glad the Cavs have become an offensive. Yeah, it's more reliable. I'm glad the Cavs have become an offensive juggernaut instead of a defensive juggernaut. If I had to choose one of the two, because I think the being good offensively is
because you end up in
reliable.
A scenario like the Utah Jazz or like where you can sort of hold them to a decent level, but you can't score. Then what do you do? Those guys are going to score anyway.
Sure,
on you.
Sure, you hold them under 100 points, but like you're not scoring 85, and so
like KD's going to still score on you. That's a problem, right? Like those guys are going to get their shots. like no matter how good defense you play.
Yeah.
Just like the marginal benefit is just so low for being a little better defensively, which is why I think Kevin Love does have a spot in this series. Like, we may lose a little bit on defense, but as long as he can be much better than he was, I guess, in Minnesota, he can at least be on the floor and give us a lot of spacing on the offensive end.
Yeah.
I think he can also do some damage on the boards this time, which he hasn't been able to do in the past.
I think that's highly likely. He can't be... It's very unlikely that he'll be as bad as he has been rebounding. I think there's just some bad luck there.
I also hope they just go away from ISOing him in the post. I just don't think that ever works. It may work against smaller guys. So, like, if you have, like, let's say Klay Thompson maybe switch on him, maybe you can try that. But other than that, like, just don't try that. Don't throw the ball
at him. I find it frustrating how the Cavs at times clearly make it a point of emphasis to get Love involved. And sometimes that means they just try to feed it to him in the post. I don't think that's the right thing. He's not that great there. And against the Warriors, that's asking a lot.
They're getting what they want, right? At that point. Like, they want Kevin ISO against Draymond in the post.
Do you think the Cavs... I'm trying to decide if I should go to any of these games.
I would go, if you want to go, I would wait till you see the first three or four games and then decide.
Yeah.
Because then it feels competitive, and then you can definitely go into five or seven.
Right. I think that's the right play. I would rather go to games 5 and 7 than.
Because, like, let's say they're down 3-1, maybe you don't want to go to game 5. That's fine. But if they're tied 2-2, yeah, go to game 5.
Right. Yeah, okay. And assuming I'm not going to spend $20,000 on tickets, which I'm not. I can't go to everyone. Yeah, the tickets are just ridiculous this year.
Have they gone up from last year?
I've looked a little bit. I don't really... The way I do this is I buy the tickets at the last second I can possibly stomach. And I buy just single tickets. And it's hard to know what the prices are going to be until like an hour before game time, because the market doesn't really shake out until then.
One thing we didn't mention is turnovers, because I think...
Oh, yeah.
Cavs have not been great. Like, they've been just as good as the Warriors have, which is not great in general, I think. I think they've turned over the ball a little too much for my liking, and that's usually a killer against the Warriors. And honestly, it's also clear against the Cavs that the Warriors do that too, because LeBron and Kyrie can get out in transition too.
Yes, and the Warriors were sloppy at times in the finals last year.
Very sloppy, yeah. So I think LeBron is just going to have to limit his turnovers. He's been a little too lazy here and there. And it's not like he's getting the ball stripped from his hands. It's just that he's making a really lazy pass that he should know better than to not make, right?
Yeah, I think that some of the turnovers that LeBron committed in the first three rounds are avoidable with just increased effort.
His
concentration and effort were pretty high in all the games excepting that one. So I'm not sure if he has, I mean, he's already stepped it up so much, and I guess we're about to find out if there's another level.
He was also playing around a little bit in those series, right? Like, you know, you could see him like bouncing the ball.
That's true. But even he can't go 110% 100% of the time. So, yeah.
We'll see what his peak is right now. So,
yeah, I wanted to mention one other thing. So, one of the nice things about putting LeBron on a sort of substandard offensive player, having LeBron play defense against someone who's not the other team's best defensive player, is it allows him to sort of play free safety and force some turnovers. There isn't really anyone great for the Cavs to do that with. In this series, if they put him on Clay, he's going to have to, you know, just chase Clay around everywhere. And Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant. So it'll be interesting to see how many turnovers LeBron is able to force, since he'll need to be a little bit more stuck to his guy than he has been in the first three rounds. I'll be interested to see that.
That's a good point. Yeah. So I know there was this perception that he was guarding Harrison Barnes, but that's been debunked. So, like, I think John Schumann on Twitter.
Yeah, that guy's amazing, by the way.
He looked up the synergy stats for basically time guarding a guy on possession or whatever you want to call that. And LeBron spent most of his time on Draymond Green, actually, last finals. It wasn't actually on Harrison Barnes. Second highest was Harrison Barnes, but it was mostly Draymond Green.
I mean, that might be the right thing to do, especially if their plan is to let Draymond shoot, because then he can sag off of Draymond, play free safety a little bit, and try and force him through.
I think that's what they're going to end up doing. I think they're going to have to put Tristan on KD, which, like, I don't want to swallow, but at the same time, like, maybe if you can get bait KD into ISOing and you can kill their offensive flow.
Yeah, I mean, you bait KD into ISOing sometimes. Tristan's not going to be perfect. He's not, you know, he's not fast enough.
He can contest, but he's going to get blown by. That's a problem.
Like, he'll contest. It's going to happen sometimes. And also, like, it gets Tristan away from rebounds. But if Love's on Zaza, I think Love can out-rebound Zaza.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But yeah, the problem with this is, like, the more you analyze it, well, for starters, all of this analysis is, yeah, who knows. But the more I look at it, the more it's just like, man, there's just, yeah, the Warriors are so tough.
It's the KD matchup. I think if it was if they still had Harrison Barnes, I would honestly pick the Cavs to win the series just because they're much better than they were last year.
Yeah.
Just KD sort of just adds his new wrench to the whole equation, and it's just...
Yeah. Yeah, darn the mess.
I don't think we have an answer.
An MVP.
Our only answer for KD is basically, like, if we want to neutralize him, what we could do is just basically assign LeBron to him and totally take him out, right? Like, LeBron can deny the ball really well, and he could do that. But the problem is then it takes away from other aspects of what we need LeBron to do. So it's just not practical.
Right. Yeah, then LeBron's exhausted on offense. And, you know.
And God knows we can't run an offense without him, so.
Yeah. Right. Well, we've been going for a while here. You have anything else you want to add?
Do you think Kyrie's going to step up his playmaking as he has sort of in the past couple of rounds, I guess?
I don't know what to expect out of Kyrie Irving. I am really excited to see what he can do. The pessimist in me, and look, I'm terrified of Steph Curry. I just find him, I don't understand how he's so good at shooting. And I just think that the most, like, Occam's razor here says that Steph is going to be much better than he has been. Kyrie's going to be not as good as he has been the last 2 years in the finals. And those two things are going to combine and the Cavs are in big trouble. But to the extent that recent results can be encouraging, Kyrie was just unbelievable, especially toward the end of that Boston series. And maybe he has some magic left and he can, you know, surprise us on defense and continue playing the offense the way he has been. I don't know.
Yeah. That's all I had.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. I tweet during the games. There's some debate over how high quality my tweets are, but I think they're terrific. And I don't think I'm going to go to game one, so I'll definitely be tweeting during game one. And man, thanks for listening, and go Cavs.